Welcome to The Middle, an exploration into the organisational layer that has the biggest impact on overall performance. In this podcast series, Stephen Wilson from Birmingham City University discusses the issues with executives from both the private and public sectors. For alerts of the next programme, don't forget to click the follow button.
So today I'm delighted to welcome Jason Smith to the programme. Jason is from a company, Artex, well known for swirly ceilings in the 60s, but now has very much moved on to being a builders merchant distributor of a whole range of finishing products like plasterboard and all sorts of compounds. So Jason, welcome to the programme.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
I gather you started your career as a buyer in one of the fast-moving consumer goods industries, a large group of buyers indeed in that industry, some 70 or 80 people. I'm just wondering if we can start off by talking about what it felt like, trying to get ahead. What was the feelings of what was important, what your priorities were in progressing your career when you were amongst quite a large group of people in comparable roles?
Yes, you're right. I was in a supermarket environment with a massive peer group, dozens and dozens of buyers of the same level. All with varying levels of experience, but nonetheless, all sort of pitching in at the same stage. And I think what that brought me around to remembering was that we're all very much a mass, and all having very, very singular goals. So it was always just about me. The mindset was, what are my objectives? What do I need to deliver? And very little understanding, comprehension, or in not so much interest, but engagement with the overall and how I fitted into that piece. And I think the feelings were of camaraderie. There's a great deal of friendships that were developed at that time. Yet not a competitive environment, so to speak, just almost competing against yourself and against your own tasks and objectives. So, yeah, quite narrow-minded and a bit like the children in a school football team who all go chasing around looking for the ball, but without a great deal of structure or understanding of how they could better perform as a team.
That's a really interesting analogy. And I guess, and I'd like to come back to that analogy, and I guess when it comes to then stepping up to being a team leader, as it were, that kind of first level of middle management, where you are the policy applier, it's a level above the technician. It's much more getting the people in your team to achieve their results and performance that's required of the team at large. And you start getting involved in, you know, their personal issues, their motivation, their own development. But the focus is still very much about you and the team. And it feels like there is a step forward, but the perspective hasn't changed dramatically. Would you say that reflects on your own recollections of what it's like, that first level of middle management?
I think it does. I remember that in the main, my perception was that I'd progressed through the level, the standards, if you like, or the levels of capability within a role, and my natural assumption then was that by being what I termed to be, you know, a good solid buyer, was enough, and meant that I was therefore a perfectly good candidate for becoming a manager. I think you do naturally gravitate into these first steps of management positions through your ability or your capability in the role, as opposed to your ability to understand people, help people, and show empathy and engagement, those softer yet highly important skills and aspects of the role. And that comes through more in a reflective training program. You interview, and you interview based on, you know, I've delivered these numbers, and I've been great at this, and I've done the other. And then you get in, and the organization says, right, now we need to train this person to fit the role that we've put them in. So I think it's quite an interesting first step, and you naturally then go into it very narrow-mindedly, and probably with that lack of experience, find yourself being caught out once or twice.
Yeah, I'm sure that's a very much a shared experience of being caught out, because, like you say, it's retrospective training. Okay, now you're a manager. Here's what you need to start learning. Yeah, it's a very interesting one. And I'd like to explore whether you feel the same thing applies further along the career development in middle management. But it's a really poignant observation of how people are pushed into a situation and then supported to a degree and make some painful learning experiences, which no doubt you as an individual and your team members and the organisation pay a cost for to a certain extent. Those were perhaps avoidable errors, but usually we learn the fastest from those sorts of things that never ever happen again.
I think we do, and I think there's... you know, in that environment, in the supermarket arena, there's quite a high churn at those levels, and some of that can be attributed to the fact that the manager is expected to create that environment and uphold a competitive but compelling and enjoying place to be, but haven't had that training and haven't got that understanding of how that happens, and it doesn't just naturally occur when you put a number of different people and personalities in the same room. And so without that early stage training, which I think is more about bringing those thoughts to your mind and saying, you know, you're as a manager now, you need to be aware of this, you need to think of that, you need to consider the other. It doesn't naturally happen.
That's right. Really insightful reflection on the sorts of feelings that go along with finding yourself in that first managerial position. And I guess after a period of time, and, you know, for some it will be more rapid than for others, and it obviously depends on personality, but also depends on the organisation and the rate at which learning comes at you or learning opportunities come at you. Progressively, as that role goes on, I imagine that what happens is you start to get drawn in not only to the dynamics and performance of your own team, but also the interactions with your team with other teams. So the buying people start to have to liaise with the logistics people and perhaps even the merchandising people, coordinating launches, seasonal sorts of events. The scope of your engagement with others in the organisation broadens. Was that a reflection of your own experience?
Yes, it definitely does. And I think what that allows you to do is, in essence, build that element of confidence, self-confidence, and the reassurance that you are, you know, I'll laugh a bit, but you are capable of wandering around the building, finding the right people. You don't need hand-holding. You don't need to know exactly where they sit, but actually, nobody's going to think anything worse of you for wandering around saying, can you point me in the direction of so-and-so? And that we're all human beings and that we're all there to do the same thing. So you naturally start to venture into networking, and developing your own group of wider colleagues.
So there's an interesting kind of duality there. It feels to me as if here you're talking about the proactively going out and wandering about and bumping into people and saying, you know, I want to explore how you're interacting with my team and how there might be resources here I can use. But there's obviously a reactive part, which others coming to you. And I guess those things both happen in parallel. Those dialogues and that networking develops on both sides. But clearly, without you taking a pro action, it's going to be much, much slower and probably narrower than it would otherwise. So that's an interesting step, is to become more proactive. But I'm very intrigued at this stage to go back to your football analogy, because you mentioned, you know, this kind of running about stage as children learning football in the first place. Here, where you are starting to network and see other people's perspectives, is there a further football analogy in terms of seeing what the organisation needs, what the football team needs, as it were?
Yeah, I think there is. So the analogy that I used, I think at that stage, what I'm suggesting there is that when you're 7, 8, 9 years old, what you want to be is you want to be in the team, and you want to be the goal scorer. So you have a team of perhaps 10 strikers and one goalkeeper, and the goalkeeper is probably the smallest or the slowest of the group of friends. But at no stage does an 8 or 9 year old sit back and say, you know, this team would be so much stronger if we had a really rock solid defender or a slick midfielder. We just don't think in that way. And I think that's a kind of a maturity stage that we go through within middle management career development too, which is that actually it's important to have all of those parts. And if you have that that attribute where you can subtly sit back and review and understand and interrogate what's in front of you and identify those gaps, that you can either make a straightforward and robust decision to go ahead and fill that, or you can proactively look to migrate a part of that team or that wider network to fill that void too.
That's a very interesting comment there that suggests that to a certain extent, when you are at the first level managing your team and early in this stage of broadening your perspective and network, you are controlling yourself and shaping yourself to fit the environment. And I'm hearing from you, Jason, that starting to develop this kind of ability to see that's happening to yourself, to feel that's happening to yourself, and then see an alternative view, which is saying, well, actually, perhaps I want an environment where I can be more me, rather than spending quite a lot of effort consciously and unconsciously to shape myself to the organisation. Maybe I need to start thinking about an organisation that fits my characteristics, traits, abilities more naturally.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think I went through that journey or that phase myself when I was seeking to progress through the industry. I got to that stage of realization that in the supermarkets in particular, when looking for a buyer, they recruit a buyer, they recruit another buyer, they recruit a buyer. So it's a very rigid and restrictive process. It's really important to stand out, and it's really important to recognize the need to stand out and consciously think about how to do that and what you might need to do. Whereas on more recent reflections, I think my own recruitment style has changed now, in that I will recruit based on attributes and cultural fit far more stronger. They have a far more stronger draw to me than experience, skill, experience and knowledge in a particular role. Because I think that gives you that flexibility. If you look across a team and you're missing a fundamental skill set, then that if that's not a natural fit to a typical job spec of a vacancy that you have, that doesn't mean you can't link the two. You just have to be conscious about making that decision and have a have a development plan and a program for the individual and the organization to allow time, space, and capacity for that migration to happen.
Those phases, they're overlapping layers, it occurs to me, of the maturing into that role, the developing of the network, the developing of perspectives, the developing of your own perspective of self, skills, fit with the industry. I imagine that takes some little time. I am concerned currently in 2020 that this enormous pressure on organisations to get more women at board level may really come a cropper because of the rush in terms of timing. Well, you've done that for a year, now you can move on. We've got to get you up to the board as quick as we can, and we've got four steps to do. That feels to me as if you've cast light on a potential vulnerability of this understandable pressure to get more women in the boardroom, which is perfectly justifiable. But I think you've illuminated one stage that might be particularly precarious. After a while, there comes the opportunity for certain people to then move up to that next stage of where you're starting to be prepared, and you hinted at this, be prepared for the next level of position. Rather than being in the next position and prepared for it, this time it feels more like you're being prepared for, being exposed to the different challenges in the organization to prepare you for the next level. And did you have experience of that as well, of feeling this other side of being prepared beforehand?
I think there's almost a flip that occurs. So within the training retrospectively at the early stages of management, I think that flip occurs. And as you get to a certain level and continue to look to develop and progress your career, the organization's approach and support mechanisms change too, because you start to get to a point where there's coaching available, there's mentoring available, there's development programs available. And whilst they might have been available in the early stages of your career too in certain organizations, I think what happens is you start to use them in advance of your next move to ready yourself for that move, rather because you have your own personal maturity as well as career maturity. So you start to get more of a feel of where you want to go and the direction you want to carve out the rest of your career, and therefore you can be a bit more steady and a bit more progressive with it and a bit more prepared. So you get that flip where you do the training and the development about understanding how to be a manager and how to evolve from management to leadership. And I think a lot of that happens before you move into role.
And by inference, that you do that in preparation for opportunities that might not exist at the moment. And there's almost a kind of a waiting stage where you're being prepared, you're feeling your perspective broader, you're aware of what needs to be done next, as it were, rather than just more of the same. But the opportunities need to arise inside the organisation, and I guess sometimes they come fairly quickly and sometimes they may come frustratingly slowly, and people can be lost at that stage if that opportunity comes up elsewhere.
Yeah, they do. You can feel lost, but I also think it's an opportunity where you can continue that personal development, where you can continue in your role but seek to either evolve your network wider or develop your own understanding. And I think naturally those next step roles become fewer and further between. So it creates that space to develop and ready yourself for that role. Things around you change, the pace of which progression and development changes. And I think it's the same on that career journey. is that you just mature as an individual as well. So not only with your learning, but just in your approach, and you recognize and almost realize the benefits of having patience and utilizing that space to sit around and almost take the opportunity to realize that maybe the next move is the one where you want to find a role in a business that fits you more so than how you may have done it up until now, which is you've found a business and then you try and mold yourself to fit it.
And I guess to a certain extent that suggests that more of yourself is being engaged with the business than it might have been before, where you were trying to mold to what you felt the organization was about.
Yeah, definitely. And maybe part of that comes through that learning in advance that I mentioned earlier. So you start to learn a lot more about cultural fits and empathy and the real key metrics of management and leadership. And therefore you attribute those back to yourself to say, well, that has to be the environment that I want to work in, that I can thrive in too. And therefore let's make sure we're in the right place for me to fit comfortably, rather than have to try and morph into something that's not naturally me.
Having made that step, you've been patient and you've hopefully the cards have fallen your way, as it were, and you find yourself in that senior level position where you're now steering the shape of the organization. You've mentioned these two threads about culture and metrics. You know, now not only are you aware of them at this leadership level of middle management, the kind of executive level, but you're also in a position where you can influence them and probably will have the perspective, the standpoint of seeing conflicts in the organization, tensions in the organization, and be able to reflect on whether the culture needs to be adjusted in certain ways, or the metrics are driving the wrong behaviors, or the reporting relationships are not leading to the right behaviors. These are interesting issues that you're starting to surface about this top level, this executive level of middle management.
Yeah, it's obvious to say your responsibilities change, but the dynamics around you change too. So you go from being a contributor to the culture and the feedback elements of that to being the custodian, and I think that also comes along with that step change from being in the infancy of being my work or my time in work is 100% about me, and it's 100% about me having to deliver what's requested of me. You move through this environment to a place where it's now 100% about other people. You're just there to help facilitate and help ensure that that group of people can get the best out of one another, and can harmonize and can naturally sit amongst that culture and that you wish to portray and to create and provide. Whilst equally having the ambition and desire to deliver on those key metrics too.
So purpose is starting to be the kind of bedfellow with this notion of custodian, which I like. You very lucidly explain this custodian challenge, this perspective of drawing it all together, and the purpose, which sometimes is defined just in terms of financial metrics of this financially controlled organization. But then I imagine there's a more strategic perspective in terms of, well, which direction is this business going? What is the purpose of this organization? Starts to come to the fore very much more consciously, along with the custodian about what this organization should be like.
Yeah, very much. And I think it's, it has to be seen as being a higher priority than the KPIs or the metrics that we allude to. Because fundamentally, for those that are within the organization and for those looking to enter into the organization, you know, it's important that people understand the type of environment that they're going to be, that they're in. And, you know, the last thing you want is people to be sat spending the amount of time that we do in and around our workplace and our work environment just thinking, this just isn't me. Because if it isn't you, it's wrong. And it's not that the culture within that business is wrong or that the way you feel is wrong. It's just that the two aren't meeting. They're not harmonized. And I think it's really important because by having almost a by using purpose to create the cultural definition, it then opens up and allows those in the recruitment roles to ensure that their selection process is about bringing the right people or same like-minded people into the organization to maintain that harmony.
And clearly, when it comes to culture, people watch, particularly new incumbents to leadership roles, as to what sorts of behaviours are acceptable. What sort of culture is it? Is it, fight your corner to the death? Is it collaborative? Are you able to talk about your feelings openly? You know, or is this a shout at each other and slam the door on the way out from heated, full and frank discussions? People watch those behaviours very clearly, and to a certain extent, it's for the leader to set that deliberately and probably to explain the purpose and explain a great deal. And you hear this from chief executives a great deal. You know, I have to keep telling it and telling it and telling it. It's communicate, communicate, communicate. And I guess this purpose piece and the values of the organisation which you hint at are becoming the core of this role, this custodian, purpose, steering and being corporate architect almost.
Yeah, it's very much one of the few remaining areas, I believe, when you enter into this management level, where lead by example is absolutely fundamental. There's no getting away from it. There's no shying away from it. And sometimes you have to exaggerate your own activities and your own processes and ways to just get the emphasis across. And you're right, the communication piece is critical, because if you haven't told people or you haven't helped people understand what those core principles are, what those key attributes are, and how the organization is designing itself to flow, you can't expect people to participate or comply or to relay those values to others around them.
Jason, it's been a really far-reaching and a very interesting focus on the individual development in the different roles progressing through middle management, the fit with the organisation and how you're developing custodian role. So thank you very much indeed for your time. I really enjoyed talking to you.
And thanks for having me on, Stephen. It's been a really interesting conversation. Thank you.
The Middle was conceived and produced by Stephen Wilson. For notifications of future episodes, just click the follow button. Thank you for listening.